I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the program, we'll have an update on China's devastating earthquake. Authorities now say at least 50,000 people have died. We'll check in on how some Chinese American communities are dealing with the crisis. And we'll talk about the ongoing battle over BET's programming. One minister says there's too much profanity and sex, and he has the data to prove it. But first, the price of crude oil topped $135 per barrel yesterday, and in many cities, gas prices have hit $4 a gallon, just in time for Memorial Day. So we thought it was a good time to check in with one political leader who is addressing the energy crisis head-on, the governor of Montana, Brian Schweitzer. A Democrat, he'd never held an elective office before being elected governor in 2004. What had he been doing? Farming, ranching, earning degrees in international agronomy and soil science, learning Arabic, working around the world as an irrigation specialist for many years in Africa and the Middle East. And that experience, he says, has led him to some firm conclusions about this country's energy policy and what we need to do now, which he's going to share with us. He's also a superdelegate to this summer's Democratic Convention, and we're pleased he can spend some time with us. Governor, welcome.
Great to be here, Michelle.
I wanted to talk about energy policy and wondered, was your time overseas what got you interested in energy policy? Was it something else?
Absolutely. Look, I think I have a fair understanding of the Middle East. When they voted to go to war in Iraq, I wasn't in U.S. Congress, but had I been there, I'd have been one of the ones who stood up and said, you know, that's a dumb idea. Look, we've had 30,000 men and women in uniform on the Arabian Peninsula for the last 50 years, protecting the oil fields and the royal family. We already have 100,000 men and women in uniform in Kuwait. We have planes flying over Iraq 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Heck, you can't put a loaf of bread in the back of a pickup without us knowing about it. You know, we've heard all kinds of excuses for going in now. Let's see, from the very beginning, it was weapons of mass destruction. Well, the only reason we actually knew they had weapons of mass destruction is during the 80s, while I lived next door, we were supporting Saddam Hussein and his war against Iran. So after we got over the fact that we weren't really looking for weapons of mass destruction, we heard the administration say that actually what we're going to do is build a democracy there. So it didn't make a lot of sense. And then what are we going to say to our allies in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia about our plan to spread democracy across the Middle East? Does that mean that we're going to overthrow the royal families of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia too? So clearly the Bush administration is telling one thing to the American people, and it's certainly a different thing to our allies in the Middle East. So it's illogical, and, you know, frankly, we are there, and I'm going to say something that now people aren't going to like. We've been there for 50 years, and we're going to be there for a lot longer. In fact, if you want to find out who's responsible for this war, you need to look in the mirror. You are. You use oil. You've made us dependent on foreign oil. 65% of the oil we consume comes from off of our shores. Good part of it comes from unstable regions. So you're responsible.
So you're saying at the end of the day, these military conflicts are really about safeguarding our access to oil.
Yeah. And I don't know how anybody
doesn't
can
seem
look
to be working
that.
Too well.
No, it doesn't seem to be. And let me tell you how this generation can be the generation that doesn't send the next generation to war. We get domestic American technology, right? We build a consumption system and a production system that is wholly American. We produce our own energy, and it's not so tough. We have the technology today. If everybody who has a passenger car or light truck or SUV in America had a plug-in hybrid that got 40 miles on a charge, if that car was parked in your garage at night, in the middle of the night when we have excess electricity capacity, if you bought your electricity for a third of what it's going to be worth the next day, then in the next day, if you didn't need 40 miles, well, you can sell some electricity back into the market for three times what you paid for it. If we were designed such a system right now and we started building these cars, within 10 years, we wouldn't have to import a single barrel of oil, and you'd be driving those cars for about the equivalent of a buck a gallon.
You advocate a 12-step program to break our addiction to foreign oil. You've talked a little bit about some of those things. Could you just briefly as you can, go through some of the highlights?
All right. Here's a couple of things. Almost all of the steps that are being taken for energy independence are taken by the states. In Montana, for example, I got the legislature to pass in 2005 a renewable portfolio standard that by 2015, 15% of our electricity will be from renewable resources. I'm the first governor in America to sign something called 25 by 25, so that 25% of all of the energy that we consume in this country by the year 2025 is from American renewable resources. Now, states can take the lead, but we need a couple of things for Congress to do. We don't ask much. And, you know, of course, they're not going to do much. But here's the two things I'd ask them to do. I'd like them to pass two laws. Number one, I would like them to give a 15% tax credit to any consumer in America that buys a plug-in hybrid that gets 40 miles on the battery charge from the get-go. Secondly, I would like Congress to pass a law so that every utility in America that sells you electricity, they would be obligated to buy electricity back from anybody that they sold electricity to. You would buy your electricity in the middle of the night, and we'd set up a real-time price so that electricity, which is worth a lot less in the middle of the night, you pay 30% of what it's worth the next day. The next day, you either sell it back into the grid or you use it for driving. It'll make you a better consumer. You'd buy a refrigerator that actually used its electricity in the middle of the night. And within these two pieces of legislation alone would mean that about 10 years from now, we wouldn't be importing any oil. And we will have created the greatest technologic advances in energy production and consumption in the history of this country, and we'd export it all over the world.
Would you be interested in being Secretary of Energy? Put some of these
no,
ideas
I can't.
Into practice?
I'm not. I'm a very slow typer. I type with just two fingers. I can't be anybody's secretary. But I can tell you, in Montana, we're going to design.
I think Secretary of Energy gets somebody to type for him. Or
they get
her.
Somebody to type.
That's what I hear.
I don't know how many million people are listening to this right now, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you've ever been to Montana and you've ever been around the governor of Montana in Montana right now, every single one of them would say, Brian, you just keep being governor. You're having a lot more fun and you're making bigger changes by being governor than you would be anybody's secretary.
Okay. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Governor Brian Schweitzer, governor of Montana, about America's energy issues and hopefully a little bit about himself. Speaking of yourself, before you became governor, you'd never held an elective office. What made you do it?
Well, you know, I watch what's going on in this country, and I'm noticing that we're creating a system in this country and around the world that jeopardizes the next generation. It could be, if we don't get this energy balance right, if we don't create a sustainable energy system that doesn't pollute the planet, if we don't create a sustainable food production and consumption system, then we are at risk for the first time in four generations of handing the next generation a country and a world that is less than the one that our parents handed us. And I that's unacceptable to me. And I believe that this Y generation, these people that are 28 years and younger, they will be considered the greatest generation. This generation are handed the greatest challenges in the history of this country. But I'm very optimistic. I mean, right now, we need a leader in Washington, D.C. that will look at us in our living rooms on that television and point right at us and say, I want you, each individual in America, to join together to be the generation of we, not the generation of me. I want to challenge every fifth grade teacher to find the next engineer or scientist that will change the world.
Since you have strong feelings about the kind of person that you want to see in that role, why not endorse?
As you might know, the last best place, Montana, is the last vote cast in the Democratic primary. And so I want to make sure that these candidates for president come to Montana, compete for our votes, and when Montana's done voting, then I'll tell you who I'm for.
Some people are concerned that the longer this thing drags on, the harder it will be for the party to unify in the fall. Do you have that concern?
Those people are smoking pine cones. Not at all. Listen, we're going to come back together again. The Democrats are going to win this. I feel sorry for my good friends happen to be Republicans. But, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth. And frankly, you've had an opportunity during the last 7 years. And about every way we can measure your performance, we'd give you maybe a C- or a D+.
Speaking of good friends who are Republicans, your lieutenant governor is a Republican whom you added on the ticket. That's an unusual thing to do these days. And I was wondering if you think that's something that either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama should consider, should they become the nominee, as a sign of national unity.
Well, as you've just mentioned, we're the only fused ticket in America. I selected a Republican state senator to be my running mate, and we ran together as a single ticket. And we hear people in Washington, D.C. saying they want to reach across or they want to work together and all the rest of it. It turns out to be just rhetoric. What they want to do is reach across the table and get some more money from some lobbyist so that they can continue to get reelected. I think it's time that we say, look, just because you're from another party doesn't mean you have bad ideas. I think it's important in Washington, D.C. in particular for people to reach across the aisle and start building coalitions at the middle. That's where you get things done. But the problem we have now is the loudest voices are the ones that are able to muster all the funds from these lobbyists. And if folks would do like John Bollinger and I, that's my lieutenant governor, we don't take any PAC money. We said a long time ago, we're not going to let a single lobbyist buy their way to the front of the line. When I was elected governor of Montana, I said, contrary to the way they've been doing business here, I won't appoint a lobbyist to any commission or board. About a third of all of those seats when I was elected were held by people who were paid to have an opinion. I said, that's not any way to run a government. I am the least popular governor in the history of Montana among the lobbyists, and I'm kind of proud of that.
Well, why not spread the love and join somebody's ticket? Spread that good Montana vibe through the rest of the electorate. Why not? Vice president? Cabinet position.
You know, I'm not very good at vice, and I don't think that I ought to be in charge of vice.
Okay, I think that's as far as we're going to get with that. I cannot let you go until I ask, is it true that your dog, Jag, got a book deal before you did?
He did get a book deal. All of the money that he has garnered with his bestseller, which is in the fourth printing right now, goes to the Ronald McDonald House. He's a very smart dog. You can Google him. His name is Jag. He is the dog that is the most popular dog in Montana. He's the most popular politician in Montana. His approval rating is 10 points higher than mine. I'm just glad that he's not old enough to run against me.
Brian Schweitzer is the governor of Montana. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back and see us.
Thanks for having me.